Peter Kubra has been advocating for the rights of incarcerated people in New Mexico since the 1980s. He's been involved in some of the longest-running court cases in state history over conditions inside the walls. Now the retired Albuquerque attorney is sounding a note of optimism as University of New Mexico Hospital takes over the medical services contract at the Bernalillo County Jail. Executive producer Jeff Proctor spoke with Mr. Kubra about why it's a welcome change from private companies that have repeatedly failed to care for people who are locked up.
Peter, thank you so much for joining me on New Mexico in Focus today.
It's a pleasure being here. Thank you.
As we just heard Gene say, you and I are going to spend some time talking today about the new partnership between UNM Hospital and Bernalillo County for provision of medical services at the jail. But I'd like to begin by backing up a little bit and talking about sort of what's been going on at the Metropolitan Detention Center in recent years. We've had more than 20 deaths there since the beginning of 2020. Many of those were folks who were detoxing from substances. What have been the points of failure that have led to that huge increase in deaths at the jail?
Well, the two big things that I've noticed since the Corizon Corporation was brought in October of 2021 is that this corporation, even unlike the other for-profit corporations, did not follow any of the patterns that we had established there that were working. And so, for example, they made longtime employees start to do every kind of nursing across the board in a way that they weren't skilled to do, instead of specialize in the areas where they had special skills. And so there was ineptitude among the staff in a way we didn't see before. But most troubling is that they never did staff up. Almost half of the positions that were authorized and required by the federal court order in the McClendon case, they never filled in the almost 2 years that they were there.
And you think that is a pretty significant contributor to what we've seen going on out there in terms of people losing their lives?
Well, yes. Among the people who died while they were in the course of detoxing, which was a substantial percentage of the deaths, those people were not monitored properly. People who were supposed to be doing it were not properly trained or skilled, knowledgeable. And of course, the compounding factor that has contributed to all of the problems with healthcare inside the jail is that there is not enough custody staff. And so with all of those vacancies, the custody staff frequently didn't get people to the appointments that they needed. So for people with chronic problems who didn't die in the first couple of days, it was often the case that they were never taken to the medical appointments that they had scheduled because there was no one to just walk them down the hall to get them to the clinic.
Gotcha. Let's open the lens just a little bit. I think that sometimes people forget or get confused about the difference between prisons and jails. Who is it who's locked up, incarcerated at the Metropolitan Detention Center?
Well, a substantial majority of the people inside the jail are there because they've been accused of something and they're waiting for a court to decide whether they're guilty or they're not guilty. And so pre-trial detention is what jails are mostly about, not just Metropolitan Detention Center, but across the country. And then there are people who are charged with serious offenses, felonies, and there are people who are charged with misdemeanors. Misdemeanors don't go to prison. So if your offense that you're alleged to have committed or found to have committed is a low-level offense, you don't go to prison. And people in prison have been adjudicated guilty of something and always a felony. And so if you haven't been accused of something serious, you never go to prison. And if you are not yet convicted of anything, you only be in jail.
Folks, the system at least ostensibly still considers innocent.
Yes.
Let's go a little deeper on who is in the jail. I know you wanted to talk some about the population numbers, the most recent population numbers. What are we seeing over the course of the last year or two in terms of how many folks are in the jail and what kind of life status they have?
Well, there are a couple of things that I think of as really important for the public to know. There was a time when we had less than 1,100 people inside the jail, just a couple of years ago. And today we're bumping up against 1,600. Mm-hmm. And so that's been a substantial, I think it's around a 40% increase in the number of people housed inside the jail. There are several factors that go into that, but the one that I'm most concerned about is it appears to me that the city of Albuquerque made a decision in the last year or two that they were going to start to crack down on the homeless. And so countless people, hundreds of people, every month are being incarcerated for petty things that no one else would be incarcerated for. Were you trespassing? Were you loitering? Were you jaywalking? People who don't have permanent addresses, the city of Albuquerque has their police department sweeping them out of the streets and into the jail. And so that's one of the big components. And that's the thing that is most remarkable to me. This morning I was looking at the website. The county has a, they call it a dashboard, that shows the census in the jail and it breaks down certain traits. Today, over 500 people inside the jail, there's about 1,591 people, as I recall, on the dashboard as committed to the jail. Over 500 people are people who don't have an address. And so they call them transient. It's not necessarily so. Many of these people have lived their whole lives here. But it is shocking that over a third of the people in the jail are people who can't afford housing.
It is shocking, over a third. That's a huge number. And I think it's a good segue into my next question. Living in Albuquerque in 2023, you cannot turn your head even a quarter of a degree without seeing evidence of, or at least discussion of, increasing crime rates and the crisis facing unsheltered people here. To swing it back a little bit to those medical services that are supposed to be provided in the jail, how does that provision or lack of that provision inside the jail impact what's happening in the community outside the jail?
Well, my thoughts are these, that there is a system that was designed and established and put into place a few years ago called the Resource and Reentry Center. And it's at the old Metro Courthouse at Roma and 4th. And the concept of that is a very sound concept, that people would go there and have a chance there to have a warm handoff to social services, mental health services, drug treatment services. But in fact, it has never operated properly. And so people are routinely being brought there long after business hours, oftentimes as late as 3 a.m., straight from the jail, and then cast out. And at that point, that facility can't really do anything for them. So the Resource Reentry Center is not working properly. The other thing that is very concerning to me is that what we call discharge planning or reentry planning is nominally supposed to be happening for everybody who leaves the jail. But because of the lack of staffing, both security staffing and mental health staffing, that has ground to a halt as well. And so people are leaving there in the dark, in the night, no place to go,
no
medication supports available. Conceptually, people are supposed to get access to pills by getting a script and then going to Walgreens and so forth to keep their medicine. But oftentimes people never get those pills. Mm-hmm. Because really what has become the truth is something that the jail warden has said. He came from Texas and he's got a background in other places, and he said he doesn't run a jail, he runs New Mexico's biggest detox facility. And so the people with problems with drugs and alcohol and also psychiatric conditions, those are primarily the people in the jail. Most of the people inside the jail in the last few years have been receiving psychiatric care while in jail. And so the previous warden said that he wasn't running a jail. He was running New Mexico's biggest mental health facility.
So to go back to something you had mentioned earlier, you did mention Corizon, the company that previously had the medical services contract at the Metropolitan Detention Center. I'd like to ask just a brief question about that model, having for-profit companies perform that work. What problems or issues have you seen with that model?
I would encourage you and others who are listening, watching, to take a look online at, just look up Reuters and private prison health care. And you'll find an article from a couple of years ago where Reuters did this in-depth study. So what some people have called the medical incarceration industrial complex is something that's developed in my years as an advocate. I started doing this kind of work, helping people who get incarcerated back in the 80s. And since that time, privatized health care by for-profit corporations has proliferated in America. And the last I saw, the statistic was that about 65% of all people who are incarcerated are getting their medical care from private for-profit corporations in America. And frankly, those corporations have no incentive to give good care. They make their profit by withholding care. And so the death rate among people who are in a facility where private for-profit corporations are the vendor, the provider of health care, the death rate is markedly higher in those facilities across the nation than in places where the government directly operates the medical care.
I think you kind of just answered my next question, but I'm going to try it anyway and see if it kind of spurs you to say something in addition. That model that you just described is changing for MDC. Just last week, UNM Hospital took over that medical services contract. It's a four-year contract, $20 million a year. It creates a new government entity called the MDC Healthcare Authority. For as long as I have known you, you have advocated for a setup like that. Why?
Well, that one's really simple. In 1995, some other lawyers and I sued the jail because of how people with intellectual disabilities and psychiatric conditions were being mistreated, abused, and neglected inside the old jail downtown. And as a result of that McClendon case, we worked with the city, which was then administering the jail, and they negotiated with the University of New Mexico. And UNM's psychiatric center began, when we settled that case in 1996, to be the provider of psychiatric care and mental health services. And then in the next couple of years, they became the provider of all health care. And through 2003, when the city threw up its hands and said, we don't want to do this anymore, county, you have to take back the jail management. At that time, through 2003, UNM was running the operation, and we were seeing market improvement once they were there compared to what we saw before that. And when the county decided to put out a request for proposals and let any vendor offer to do it, then these corporations, as they do, they come like sharks and they say, I'll do it, I'll do it for less. And they promise to follow the orders in the McClendon case. They never do. They knowingly are bidding at a number that is not realistic to comply with the court orders or with good standard practice either. And then these corporations have, you know, profited as much as they could, reduced care as much as they could get away with, pocketed the money, and then move on. And then we've repeated that cycle ever since 2003.
So your optimism is actually rooted in experience and having seen the difference between a government entity manage that care and a private entity manage that care. I think some people watching this are going to say, the leadership of the county isn't changing, the leadership at the jail isn't changing. Will this new entity necessarily usher in more transparency, more accountability, and most importantly, better care for the people who are incarcerated there?
That hangs in the balance right this minute. Because this health authority, I fully support. This is the best development I've seen in decades with respect to our jail system. But it's only conceptually so. Because UNM stepped up and their leaders decided that they were going to do this because, one, it was the right thing. It would save lives of their patients who they served before jail, they serve after jail. Now they're going to serve them continuously. So UNM correctly said, we're going to save some lives. We're going to help people have better quality of life. And so they did that courageously, but they also did it at great risk. Because the contract that they signed, or I guess it's now called a joint powers agreement between UNM and the county, it says that the county's only going to pay the same inadequate amount of money they've been paying for the private company. until they negotiate something else. And so that's the key question. The county stopped giving decent care to save money. The county, for years, kept paying too little to save money. And now the county has to either pay an adequate amount or even UNM can't rescue the situation. So it comes down to whether the county commission, the county manager, will actually afford sufficient dollars to make this happen. Now, I want to say there's really an easy answer to that. Back in 2015, when the county created the Behavioral Health Initiative, there's a lot of new dollars. I think we're around $29 million generated annually through the Behavioral Health Initiative. And I and other advocates started saying in 2016, let's match those local dollars with the Medicaid program. So for every dollar that we get from the county, we'll get $3.50 from the federal government through the Medicaid program. To this day, the county's never done it.
Hmm. So, last question is this. How will we measure success of this partnership? When's a good time to come back and look at this? And what will be the benchmarks that say this is working or has worked?
Well, I'm going to be explicit about it. At this juncture, just giving some basic care to people over the next few months, that by itself would be heroically different. And so we need to think in the next few months about going from grossly inadequate care, unconstitutional care, to constitutional care where people get rudimentary care. And they need to staff up. UNM has had difficulty for reasons I don't yet understand, increasing the staff. And in fact, some people have left for reasons that are mysterious. So right now we're still grossly understaffed. And so we need to get through this initial phase, which is still a crisis. And people are at risk of death today because we don't have enough security staff and enough medical mental health staff. So let's look at, by the beginning of next year, can we have a stable basic medical mental health program? Ultimately, though, the things that will be the best measures are, of course, reductions of deaths and then reductions of incarceration. Because the lack of proper mental health treatment and drug treatment for the people who leave that jail is the biggest single cause for many of these petty offenses. Mm-hmm. People who don't get treatment for both of those problems end up committing new offenses. And we can reduce the census in the jail through good health care. And so those are the two critical measures to me.
Peter Kubra, thanks so much for coming down today. I really appreciate it.
Happy to be here. Thanks so much for the work.